It is 1:30. This is KYR 89.1. I'm Daniel Breen. We're breaking into our live programming this hour to bring you live coverage of Governor Asa Hutchinson's latest daily briefing on the coronavirus outbreak in Arkansas. And now we go live to Governor Asa Hutchinson from the state capitol.
Smith is keeping his on for a little bit longer. Thank you all for joining us for the COVID-19 daily update today. And please be joined by Dr. Nate Smith, our Secretary of Health, and today we have Dexter Payne, our Director of Department of Corrections. I've asked him to join us, and we have Secretary Mike Preston, who is joining us as well, Secretary of Commerce. This is a busy day in terms of announcements and news and information that we want to provide to Arkansans that are patiently waiting through this pandemic and carefully taking action to reopen, but at the same time, make sure everybody stays safe. So first, let's do the case update. Yesterday, there were 3,431 cases. We've had 27 new cases, which brings us to 3,458. The hospitalizations are down 7 from 98 to 91, and the deaths are up 5 from 76 to 51. The 27 increase in cases is one of the smallest, as you know, that we've had in a long, long time. And so I ask, of course, well, how many tests did we do? And we did 1,629 tests, and we had 27 positive cases. And so that's certainly a very good news in terms of the positivity rate. And so let's go to the charts here that shows this in a different fashion. And of course, the good news, these are number of new cases each day in Arkansas, beginning with the first day of the pandemic, and takes us through the current day at the end that you say is a downward path of what, the 27 cases from the height. And so we've had a consistent trend downward in those cases that's shown on the next chart as well, which is the 7-day rolling average of new COVID cases. You can see the rolling average from the orange line, and again, you can see the downward trend that we've had. And this is, I'll mention this a little bit later when we're talking about our phases, but we worked hard to meet the gating criteria for phase one, and we've really entered phase one of the Reopening America Again program of the White House. And so, of course, then you look at, well, how do you get to phase two? Well, it's 14 days where you don't have a resurgence. And so, of course, that's what we're looking at, because you can't hardly get lower in terms of new cases than what we are right now. So hopefully it'll be flat, but it won't be a stark resurgence or something that we can't control. And then the next one is the number of hospitalizations. You can see our hospitalizations down a little bit still, under 100. And then that leads me, after talking about the cases, to the announcements that I want to make today. And I said that we would, on May 4, talk about our worship services in large venues. And so I'm pleased to announce today that we are issuing the guidance for places of worship, effective today. And so that is, we continue to encourage online platforms so that everybody, if they choose, can stay at home and still utilize the online platform for their services and their worship. Signs upon entry, reminding people if you've had recent fear symptoms or contact with a positive patient, you should not be coming in. 6-foot physical distancing, except for family groups. Obviously, if you go there with your family, you sit together, but there should be a 6-foot distance from any other parishioners or members of the congregation. Face covering should be worn at all times if you're over 10 years of age. Of course, worship leaders and performing singers would not be wearing a mask. And then there should be a 12-foot physical distance between the worship leaders and the congregation to allow a little bit more spacing. Hand sanitizing stations at entrances, the next one. Meet and greet time should be moved outside. Refreshments offered outdoors only. lines for entry-exit, monitored for distancing. Sometimes that's a choke point as they leave, they all come, even though you might have distancing inside, as you get to the door, you congregate together, so they have to watch that. And a number of different items here, I won't have to go through them all. No classes for youth or childcare, and sanitized common areas. Now let me emphasize that we're talking about places of worship. And so this is called guidance. And this is what we offered before whenever we said we should not be worshiping or we should be doing it online. Those are guidance in contrast to a directive. Everything else we issue are directives primarily, but the guidance is for places of worship, recognizing the separation of powers under our First Amendment and separation of church and state, I should say. And so, but I'm very appreciative because our places of worship have adhered to these. They follow this guidance. They take it very seriously. They don't want anybody to get the virus and to have adverse health consequences as a result of it. And so this is options for them to proceed. I've talked to a number of churches and they welcome this, but at the same time, I think there many of them will proceed very cautiously, as they should, because these are guidelines that are options for them to consider. I also wanted to thank Dr. Sonny Tucker, Bishop Michael Mitchell, and Bishop Gary Muller for their service on the Economic Recovery Task Force that helped to shape this guidance with Dr. Smith's team as well. And then let's go to another item, which is the large outdoor venues. And this is a directive effective May 4th. This applies to arenas, sports venues, racetracks, stadiums, amusement centers, and fairgrounds. Those type, of course, that's not all inclusive. And this is 12-foot distance between performers and the audience. Right now, these are not allowed at all, and so we can go up to 50 or fewer performers or players or contestants and the audience of 50 or fewer people. And I know that you're thinking, well, this is not going to help you in sports venues, and there's to a large extent that's true. But for our community festivals and our parades, our city activities, there's so many things, auctions, so many outdoor venues and rodeos that happen out there, they have to have some guidance. And so we wanted to be able to go ahead and give that to them. A 6-foot distancing and seating except for family groups. Lines should be marked and monitored for distancing, and every other row should be unoccupied. This continues the large outdoor venues directive. Face covering should be required for anyone over 10 years. Performers, of course, do not have to wear the face covering. They should be a 12-foot distancing. There should be signs advising people of how they need to be careful and of symptoms, hand sanitizer stations, and all of these will be on the Department of Health website in more detail for everyone to study. And then if you go to the indoor venues as well, outdoor, indoor venues, then this is effective May 18th. May 18th, to give a little bit more time. And so these would be auditoriums, lecture halls, movie theaters, museums, arenas, sports venues, racetracks, funeral homes, bowling alleys, 12-foot distance between performers and audience, 50 or fewer, and 6-foot distancing. And be careful about, make sure your lines are marked for distancing, and every other row should be unoccupied. It's very similar to the other initiatives, face coverings, 12-foot distancing from all others. Signs should advise no entry if any symptoms or contacts with patients. I think we actually covered some of those. That's effective May 18th. Now, for those who say, well, that's not enough, you've got to remember where we are, that we've just met our gating criteria for phase one. And in order to enlarge this more, which we all want to do, we need to be careful to keep our cases going in the right direction, which is a downward or a flat trend. We've got to keep from having a resurgence. So we need to stick with this social distancing We need to follow these guidelines so that we can, after another period of time, go into a greater number of people and more flexibility in some of these venues. So we're taking it in a very phased-in approach over this month of May, and let's be successful, let's be careful to make sure we can go into phase two. So those are the updates on those directives and guidance, and Dr. Smith might have more comments on that. In fact, I think, let me go ahead and go to the Arkansas Ready for Business grant program. As you know, this was first, we had asked for $15 million from the General Assembly for this grant program to help small businesses to get the equipment that they need, the cleaning material, make the adjustments that they need, and that was clearly not enough. And so the General Assembly said we ought to put more money into it. They agreed upon putting $55 million into this grant program for all industry sectors, and this will go live, what time tomorrow? 8 a.m. tomorrow at this website, and it will be open for 2 days at a minimum, and it'll be from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. And this will apply a cap of $100,000. It's 15% is set aside for women and minority-owned businesses, and 75% for businesses with 50 or fewer employees. These were important criteria for the General Assembly to make sure it was widespread usage, small businesses can access it. Simple application process is what's needed, driver's license, signed W-9, certificate of good standing, and that's the information that is available to all the public through this announcement today, and they'll issue an additional news release on it. But I wanted to thank the Senate Pro Tem, as well as the Speaker, as well as the Legislative Council for their approval of this, their agreement on it, and willingness to work together to accomplish something that is very, very good and important for our small businesses across Arkansas. So with that, I took a little time, but covered a lot of territory, and Secretary Smith.
Health Secretary Dr.
Thank
Nate
you, Governor.
Smith.
I'd like to give a few more details to the numbers, then a few more comments on these new guidance and directives. As the Governor mentioned, we've had 27 new cases since yesterday, bringing our total to 3,458. Of those, 1,362 are considered active cases. Of these 27 new cases, 14 were among those in correctional institutions. So only 13 of those were community cases, which is the lowest we've had in over a month, I believe. We have, as the governor mentioned, currently have 91 hospitalized patients. That's a net drop of 7 from yesterday. We have 16 currently on a ventilator. That's a net drop of 3. We have 81 deaths currently, which is an increase of 5 from yesterday. Over the weekend, we have had a total of 5 deaths from inmates in the Cummins unit. And I'd like to pause for a moment and just express comfort and condolences to the family members, not just of those 5 individuals, but all the 81. Although we in Arkansas have managed to have among the fewest deaths per population in the country, 81 deaths is 81 too many. We have, fortunately, 2,016 who have recovered from COVID-19. I'd like to give brief updates from the prison system and also from the nursing homes. The Cummins unit, we have a total now of 873 who have been infected, minus the 5 who have passed away, and that's a total of 18 new cases from yesterday. From the Federal Correctional Institute in Forest City, we now have 172, which is up 22 from yesterday. In our nursing homes, we currently have 45 nursing homes where we have at least one case amongst a resident or a staff member. We have had a total of 31 deaths among residents of nursing homes. We're up to a total of 245 residents who have been infected. That's up 5 from yesterday, and 147 staff. That's up 1 from yesterday. In terms of our large indoor venues directive, which goes into effect today, should note that that does not include casinos. We'll be working on a separate directive for casinos. They have some particular settings there that I think they've been doing a very good job of addressing, but we're going to want to work on some of the details of that separately, although it will probably go into effect about the same time. With our large indoor venues, as the governor has mentioned, that limit of not more than 50 is, I know, very constraining at this time. The reason for that really, as the governor stated, is twofold. One, the more people that we have together, the greater the chances that one or more of them will be infected with COVID-19 and potentially spread. This gives us time to get those protocols in place, get comfortable with operating in ways that are that minimize the risk of exposure to COVID-19. Also, if we do have a transmission event at one of those events, 50 is manageable for a contact investigation. We can do that fairly quickly. If we start out with thousands and we have an outbreak event that occurs at one of those venues, that can be very difficult and time-consuming to work up. The places of worship, as the governor has mentioned, this is guidance. Not all places of worship are going to be ready to start up right away. This is not forcing anyone to move forward. Also realizing that we have a wide variety of different places of worship. Some are very small in parts of the state where they have relatively few cases, and others are larger in urban areas. And it's a different equation, and maybe different resources and different options. These guidelines that we put out, I think, will help any of those venues to be able to resume as safely as possible whenever they decide to resume with in-person services again. And with that, I'll go ahead and turn it back over to the governor.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. And I wanted to ask Secretary Preston to come and make a comment on the perhaps grant process, but an update also on the pandemic unemployment assistance.
This is Commerce Secretary Mike Preston.
Thank you, Governor. And yes, appreciate the legislature and the good work that they have done the last few days in evaluating and working with us on our grant program. They saw the need, as we did as well, to make sure that there's plenty of funds available. So we look forward to opening that up again tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. We'll keep it open until 6 p.m. Tomorrow afternoon, and then again on Wednesday, same hours from 8 to 6. We'll share that anyone who did apply last week and got their application in successfully does not need to go in and reapply. We already have those applications on file, so you don't need to worry about doing that. But again, big thanks to the steering committee and the governor for the recommendation and the legislature for working with us to get those funds out. We see the desire there. On the unemployment insurance, we continue to make a lot of progress with our UI system, including the pandemic unemployment assistance, a new system that has had to be built. Our team has built this from the ground up, and I'm happy to report that they have been testing it all weekend to make sure that it is without any kinks and getting ready to start to intake the influx of pandemic unemployment assistance claims that we'll be seeing here in the near future. We anticipate issuing a press release later this afternoon with instructions related to that, but I just wanted to get up here and spend a minute to thank the team who worked so hard through the weekend troubleshooting all the issues, making sure that we are testing it in the proper manner and that we have a system built to withstand all these claims that we're going to see. With that, Governor, I'll turn it back over to you. Thank you.
Turn it open for questions.
I guess in terms of going forward, what are we going to define as a resurgence? Is it case numbers, hospitalizations? Are there certain thresholds that we're looking at?
Dr. Smith, you want to try that first?
This is Health Secretary Nate Smith again.
Certainly. The most sensitive indicator we will have is an outbreak associated with one of these events or venues that we've lifted the restrictions on. For example, if we have a cluster of infections related to a restaurant or to a beauty salon or to one of these large outdoor venues. That will be our most earliest and most sensitive indicator. Then we can identify which of those restrictions needs to be tightened up. And we can have great plans, but if they're not implemented properly, then they may not work the way they were intended. So that's our most sensitive indicator. We'll also continue to look at the number of new cases each day, even as we're continuing to increase testing. And of course, we'll also be looking at the percent positive on our test results. So these are all things that we'll be looking at very carefully, just to make sure we're not missing anything.
Yes.
Now that we're in phase one, do we have a target date for phase two?
Well, the way the White House's Opening America Again framework words it, we would look for the next 2 weeks to see if we have stable or decreasing case counts, hospitalizations, et cetera. If we're able to keep our number of new cases where we have or you know, without a significant uptake, then we'll be ready to move into phase two.
Let me add to that. Good. As you can see from many other states that have opened up, they did not meet those gating criteria. And so the White House certainly acknowledged that the governors have a lot of flexibility. But we do pay attention to that. They're well thought out. There are some specific criteria. We met phase one criteria. And so when you look at phase two and how long you stay in phase two, they recommend 14 days to see if there's any resurgence as a result of what we did in phase one. And that's what is, I think, excellent about the approach that we're taking. We're phasing it in. It's not all open on May 4th. We phased in different elements of our society so that we can better pinpoint if there is a resurgence in a particular area and identify that. It also allows you to get prepared. But I know that there'll be a lot of pressure to open up more, more quickly. And I hope everyone knows how quickly we're trying to get there. But we also want to do it safely so that we can avoid that kind of a resurgence. And I like the path we're on. I do hope everybody will help us to stay there.
A question about corrections. Based on what we saw at Cummins, it's pretty apparent that once that first case was identified, it was already spreading within the prison. So my question, what lessons were learned from that and what's being done at the other units? So in case the virus is identified there, it isn't able to spread as fast and so thoroughly throughout the unit?
Well, what we're doing is that, and we test in other units as needed, so if there's somebody that is symptomatic, we will do a test. And so that's the criteria, and that's the same as the criteria throughout the general public in Arkansas. And thank goodness, you know, Cummins is the one that we've had the largest outbreak in. And I think we've addressed it very aggressively there. And I did want to ask Dexter Payne, if you would, just to comment. I failed to call on him a moment ago, but why don't you take advantage just to bring us up to date from your standpoint about how this is being managed there at Cummins. Yes,
this is Dexter Payne, Director of the Arkansas Department of Correction.
Good afternoon. To add to that answer, what we've done at several units, we've changed the way we have the inmate beds aligned. That's the latest change that we've done, and that's going to help keep the inmates approximately 6 feet away from each other. Just wanted to go over some of the talking points for Cummins. As of May 3rd, there are 869 positive cases among the Cummins inmate. Of course, four of those have passed away. Four of the 873 that we originally had had passed away. Right now, we have six inmates that are hospitalized with two on ventilators. We have tested a total of 1,931 inmates at the Cummins unit. The first group of positive inmates have completed their 14-day observation period, many without developing any symptoms. We are working with the Arkansas Department of Health on the requirements we will have to meet before we could start uplifting that lockdown. No inmates have tested positive at any other facility within the Division of Correction. We have tested 65 inmates at 10 different facilities other than the Cummins unit. Division-wide, we have almost 70 positive, COVID-positive employees, and 54 of those 70 are at the Cummins facility. as an expected consequence of a unit-wide lockdown at Cummins is a delay in food service. I received several questions concerning the delay in food service, and basically what it is, our staff have been tasked with taking food trays to individual barracks. Those barracks have approximately 50 inmates, and like I said before, Cummins has 1,900 inmates, so we have to feed those inmates and take trays to them. So yes, there is a delay in the feeding process at the Cummins unit, and it's mainly because of that. But the inmates there are receiving three meals just as they have before. So there's no real change other than the length of time it takes for us to feed those inmates. We also have other units that are helping with the feeding process. Varner and Delta regional units are doing all of our baking for us to send our baked goods that take, you know, some length of time to do. So they're sending those goods over to the Cummins unit. Also, I know you're going to get questions about a minor disturbance at the Cummins unit this weekend. We did have a minor disturbance there where inmates set trash cans on fire. They broke windows out. We sent our emergency response teams in to help quell that situation, and it was quelled in a timely manner. One other thing that I've been getting questions on are package programs for our inmates. If you would check our website and look on our Facebook page, you will see today that we have a package program that will help the inmates get additional commissary items and hygiene products. Just wanted to give a shout out to my correctional staff, especially those at Cummins who are working hard. Also, this is Correctional Officers and Correctional Professional Week. I just want to thank my staff for the great job that they're doing. I'll turn it back over to the governor. Yes, sir.
Were any inmates or officers injured at that disturbance?
No, sir.
Thank you, Director Fang.
Yes, sir.
Is there a question? Yes, right here. Who asked? Then we'll go remotely.
I know you're trying to be careful, but there's probably a lot of parents with kids that are wondering when they're going to be able to play in tournaments that are played throughout the state. Could you give them a ballpark?
Well, as you can see, we're moving in the direction of trying to open up more outdoor activities, more indoor activities, just trying to do it carefully. And so in terms of team sports and school activities, well, team sports and summer sports activities, we want to be able to make an announcement in mid or late May that we're looking at for providing some clarity. So everyone pay attention a little bit later. We'll give a little bit more time, but we know you need to make plans for June and July, August, and we will be working with our task force and making an announcement later in May on that. Yes, ma'am.
As the state opens back up, have you talked to any mayors about lifting curfews? Do you know if they will be stay in place until the next phase or lifting soon?
I know that, I understand Jonesboro lifted their curfew, and I talked to the mayor there, and so I talk to the mayors fairly regularly, and I presume that they'll be lifting the curfews, but that's up to each individual mayor. Yes?
The Pulaski County Jail has admitted a COVID patient. I guess they ran that by you to see if that was a safe idea?
Health Secretary Nate Smith.
Yes, there is an individual who recently tested positive, and the jail has been in contact with my staff for guidance how to do that without risking the spread of COVID-19 within that facility.
So I guess that could happen in other county jails as well.
We would hope that each case of that would be done in consultation with my staff to give guidance that is specific to that situation.
Casinos, what date were you referring to?
I'll elaborate on that Dr. Smith and I, we've talked about it. He referenced that we're going to provide separate guidance for casinos, and it'll probably be very similar in the time frame that we've opened up the other indoor venues, which is May 18th. But it could vary depending upon exactly what their plan is and their level of preparation for that. Let's go remotely for a second. Is there any question remotely?
Yeah, Governor, this is Andrew with AP. Wanted to clarify something on the places of worship, just to make sure I understand. So the guidance you put out, it's just guidance. So the April 4th directive, is that no longer going to be in effect with churches? They won't face any restrictions. And the second question I had was for Secretary Smith, with all these restrictions and guidances and things, I know that you talked about the health inspectors will be in charge of this, responding to complaints on it. Given all the different rules that are going to be in place, is there going to be enough capacity or enough manpower to really be able to police this, given all the different rules for all the different entities?
In terms of the places of worship, we provided the previous directive, and that will be, guidance, and that guidance will be replaced with the guidance that we're issuing today. And these are different from directives. We don't go out and arrest people because they might, in their house of worship, might miss something. We don't do that. But I'm very aware of the fact that our houses of worship, our faith community wants to do the right thing, and they worked with us in helping to develop this guidance, and so I know that they will take it very seriously and that they will take every step to comply with that. Dr. Smith?
This is Health Secretary Nate Smith.
As to the facilities that we license, these directives will be enforced in the way that our other licensing requirements are enforced. A lot of that is complaint driven. I would hope that the industries, that the particular facilities would be highly motivated to follow the guidelines and the directives to prevent the spread of COVID-19, to protect their customers, also knowing that if there is an outbreak associated with their venue or their industry, that it will set us back and that it may mean that we have to reinstate restrictions. Many of our licensed facilities, we depend on not just the owners, but also the patrons to be vigilant to what those requirements are and to let us know in the form of a complaint if they're seeing something that doesn't quite fit so that we can investigate promptly. Again, this is something we're all going to have to work together on, but we, I think, all have the same motivation, which is to try and get back as close to normal as possible, as quickly as possible, but also as safely as possible.
Yes, ma'am.
Regarding the additional funding for the Ready for Business grant program, do you think that is enough to meet the demands?
That's unknown. Clearly, with the previous window in which they received grant applications, it exceeded it significantly. So we'll just have to wait and see. But the General Assembly has made it clear that if we want to leave this open for a full 2 days, and if the applications exceed that amount, then there'll be a discussion as to whether that needs to be supplemented. That remains to be seen. Hopefully this will be sufficient. It would be wonderful to believe that this will be sufficient for our businesses, but we'll just have to wait to see. But we do want everybody who has a need there that this will help them in their business to apply, and we'll measure what the amount is after 2 days. Yes.
With some of the businesses starting to open up this week, or the health department or any other state agencies going to be tracking to see how many of those businesses voluntarily stay closed versus those that open up under your directives?
Do y'all track any of that?
Health Secretary Smith.
We don't
Smith
have
again.
A really good way to track those individual decisions. I think we'll have a sense for it because we do work with those licensees, for example, restaurants and cosmetology, nail salons, et cetera. And I think there may be some who initially may hold off, but then they might decide to at any time. So we won't have a really good way of tracking that. Our hope, though, is that as we get through phase one, if we continue to see good trends in terms of control, containment of COVID-19, that we'll be able to move fairly swiftly. We mentioned about 2 weeks at least to see what the impact has been, and then move on to the later phases.
Let's go remotely and see if there's a question remotely.
Yes, Governor Hutchinson, this is Chad Mira with KNWA News in Fayetteville. Over the weekend, Dr. Deborah Birx with the Federal COVID-19 Task Force on Fox News Sunday made it clear the task force feels haircuts and spa services are not a safe phase one group to reopen. So can you just give us some more information on how you came up with that May 6th reopening day versus some of the other dates for other businesses, and does this give you any hesitation to that decision?
So tell me again, what did Dr. Birx say that caused her concern?
She when she was asked about haircuts, barber salon, hair salons, and spas starting to reopen in some states, she said that it was not a safe phase one group to reopen.
Well, you know, we looked at it from the standpoint that with the protective measures that were in place, you know, they can safely operate if they follow those guidelines. And Dr. Smith, did you have anything else on that?
I have two comments. One, a general comment, is that although we are obviously using the White House Opening Up America Again framework, and we are making sure that we meet those gating criteria, we've not exactly done it all in one step. We've phased some things in, for example, elective surgery. We allowed those to start under fairly stringent conditions a week before we hit phase one, and then we're phasing in some of these phase one activities not all at once. This gives us the advantage of being able to see the impact of one action versus the other. So we're not exactly doing everything in lockstep with that. Specifically with regard to the cosmetology, the spas, that's correct. That is not listed as a phase one activity. I've said that here at this public meeting. We have put together, though, some fairly strict criteria for our directive that after looking at that and discussing that with the physicians who drafted that directive, felt like this was an appropriate time based on a risk-based timing. You know, what is the risk of this activity under these conditions compared to other conditions like the restaurants, et cetera? And we decided that under these restrictions that that this period of time would be appropriate. Again, our principles here is not. We like to be as fair as possible, but it's really based on the risk of COVID-19 transmission and what restrictions we can put in place to make those safe. In many cases, those restrictions are big sacrifices for those industries, but if they can keep the risk of COVID-19 transmission to a minimum during this phase one, we're okay with moving forward with it.
Jay.
Was there anything that you guys took away from the whole Cleburne County Church outbreak real early on when establishing some of the guidance for worship centers?
Absolutely. We did learn early on that worship services aren't exempt from COVID-19 transmission, and that any congregate setting where people are together, especially if they are in a close space over a period, long period of time, there's risk of COVID-19 transmission. So the guidance that we've put in this document really is based on everything that we've learned up to this point, borrowed from other guidance documents as well. And we believe that if places of worship can put these in place faithfully, the risk of COVID-19 transmission is not zero, but it is minimal.
Let's go remotely, and then we'll come back. Is there any question remotely? Coming back here to the table, yes.
Yes. Board of Trustees, Arkansas Board of Trustees this morning voted unanimously to hope for in-classroom for all
schools this fall. And also, Hunter, your check was hoping by July 15th to have all student athletes back on campus for the start of the season. Could you just comment on that?
I think that's exciting news, that the University of Arkansas Board of Trustees made a clear statement that we want to have regular classes next year, and I think that's an optimistic approach. I hope it'll be realistic. Obviously, Hunter Yurecek, for example, is on my Economic Recovery Task Force, and so he's participating in those discussions. You've got to set those plans from his perspective, and obviously they're subject to the work with the Department of Health and not just our Department of Health, but many other departments of health across the SEC as to how we're approaching intercollegiate athletics. So we'll work continually with them, but I'm delighted that they were clear that that is their intent and desire to open classes next year.
Do you plan on extending the emergency declaration? Because I believe it's up May 11th.
Yes, we will extend those emergency declarations because we're still in the middle of this pandemic, even though we see it go in the right direction, but that will be extended.
You know,
I won't answer that yet. Yeah. Yes.
What are your projections moving into phase one? Are you expecting additional spikes as businesses open?
I just give you my view on it is yes, I expect to see some spikes, and that's not it's just the nature of the virus, and it very well could be in a prison environment, it could be somewhere else, despite all of the controls that we put into place. My hope is that even though we might have a quick spike, that because of our contact tracing capacity, the infrastructure that we've built up, we can go in there quickly and identify where it is and control that. Therefore, you don't interrupt the entire progress of reopening our economy, but you still do it in a very careful and safe way. So I hope I'm will be surprised that we won't have those kind of spikes, but whenever you see people out and some people don't follow it as closely as they should in the social distancing, there's always the risk of that. That's why we need to continue to push them to make sure they don't take this for granted or believe that this is all over.
Secretary Preston, what's gone into the building of the PUA website? I mean, I think a lot of people have been frustrated with this process, but we've just been getting questions on what is taking so long.
This is Commerce Secretary Mike Preston.
Take us through some of the process on what you guys have had to do.
So it has been a process, and it's been a partnership with the Department of Finance and Administration. So on traditional unemployment, you know, you've paid into the system. This is a brand new system that, you know, folks have not paid into. So in order to verify what amount is going to be owed, it's going to be through their 1099. So we have to be able to go back and verify that, and then to be able to build a system that's going to be able to intake anywhere from, you know, estimates of 100 to 150,000 applicants from around the state to be able to process it. So we had our system in place that was built, you know, a couple decades ago for unemployment assistance. That system has to talk to this new system. So we had to build a new system that would be compatible with this one so that they could intertwine with each other and build it up from scratch. So working with the Department of Finance Administration, our team at DWS has built this based on the guidance that came out, I guess that was kind of mid-April from the Department of Labor. Since that time, we've literally round the clock up until this weekend where we had the system, I don't want to call it complete because we're still testing it, but as complete as we've had it to this point. And we're excited now. This point is the testing is gone and it's gone smoothly, and we feel like we're, you know, right at that point we're going to be able to launch it very soon.
Is there a final question?
Is there, get back to the ball field question. Can small groups of kids practice on fields together within your guidelines?
This is Health Secretary Nate Smith again.
It's less than 50. And they maintain those distances. If they follow the particular restrictions in the directive, then I don't really care what activity they're doing as long as they follow the directive. We will be providing additional guidance on sports that's more comprehensive. Our target for making an announcement on that is mid to late May, but But as long as outdoor venues follow those guidelines to minimize the risk of COVID-19, I'm not all that particular what they do as long as it's legal otherwise.
Thank you very much.
And that was Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking in his latest daily briefing on the coronavirus outbreak here in Arkansas. This is 89.1 KUAR Little Rock, a listener-supported service of UA Little Rock in partnership with UIMS. Just a quick recap of the numbers. We have 3,458 total cases of the coronavirus here in the state. The number of deaths due to COVID-19 has risen by 5 to a total of 81. And today we heard that restrictions on places of worship will be lifted effective today. That, of course, does come with some added restrictions. Also today, restrictions on outdoor venues like sports arenas, racetracks, amusement centers, those will be lifted today as well. And on May 18th, restrictions on indoor venues like auditoriums and movie theaters will be lifted. This is KYR News.